This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio. Hey, Shireen.
Hey, Anna. This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
We got a new episode out today. We're remote recording, and we have a really great guest. Her name is Julia Rossi. She's a comedian. She's a podcaster. She's an overall wonderful person. We're going to talk to her about growing up.
We have a really good conversation. Yeah.
We talk about her growing up in Massachusetts, what it was like growing up with Italian immigrant parents, how she felt othered growing up, and dealing with identity politics, because I think we all are in this day and age. And we have a lot to think about
we
in the quarantine.
100% are. Yeah, this conversation, it was very therapeutic, and I really think you guys are going to enjoy it. So stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
We're here!
We're here.
We're rolling.
It took us so long to get here.
If you guys only knew, you guys are hearing this fresh, but if you only knew the last hour,
what we've been through. This is Ethnically Ambiguous.
This is Ethnically Ambiguous, and we're joined by another amazing guest today. This is our second remote record, so this is exciting. We're getting in the vibe of talking to ourselves in our apartment. But yeah, this is Ethnically Ambiguous, and we have a guest today who's here with us.
Kind of here. They're across the city, or they're probably not across the city, but you know what I mean. They're in their own home, social distancing away from us to record this show. Well, she's a comedian. She's a podcaster. Mm-hmm. She used to live in New York, but now lives in LA. That's a really weird thing to introduce someone as, but I'm just saying all the things I know about her. But we have Julia Rossi on. Did I say
that
right? How do you say
it?
Yeah, it's
Julia
Rossi.
Okay, thank God. I don't know if you had like a hard Z, you know, like a Rossi or something.
I mean, it probably, I love it when people say it that way, and it probably should be that way. I think my family just got lazy with it.
That happens. Yeah. The amount of letters that have been dropped out of my last name over the years is unbelievable.
Oh, yeah. This is so sad because I don't think I've ever met you. So this is a sad way to meet for the first time, but but you know what? We got to do what we got to do. And so thank you for being here with us.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought you guys had met because Julia had come and done Comedy Palace back in the day. And Shireen used to take photos up for Comedy Palace for me.
Yeah.
But it's been a while.
We might have met. Like, I feel like I may have taken your photo. But I also, like, took so many photos that I'm just assuming that I must have taken your photo. But
I mean, there's a million comedians, so we'll just say we met. Sure.
There's only one of you, though, Julia, okay? There's only one of you, and there's only one of this podcast with you, and we're going to get all into it today. So, I mean, like, I kind of like getting to know someone for the first time on the podcast because I can, like, act as a pseudo-audience member and, like, walk them through discovering who you are. So it's not all bad. I kind of feel like a little, like, inside scoop. Getting to get to know you on the podcast.
Yeah, get to know me.
Yeah. Okay, where should we start?
Well, where were you born?
So I was born in Cambridge, Massachusetts, just outside of Boston. And then my parents were both born in Italy, but they met in America.
What part of Italy?
My dad is from an area called Abruzzi, which is like south, like central. And my mom is from an area called Sperlonga, which is a beach town near Rome. And then they met, my dad immigrated here in 1958. My mom came in, no, my dad came in 55. My dad came when he was 15. And my mom came when she was 28. And then they met, they both lived in the same town. And I don't know, their stories change a lot. I think they were introduced by a family friend, pretty much like, hey, she's Italian, you're Italian, get married. You know, like not a arranged marriage, but like you guys should be together. But then for a while, there was a story going around that my like dad delivered sausage to her house, but I think he was just making a dirty joke. And I was like, I'm 7.
Oh my God. I'm seven.
I believe they were introduced by like a mutual family friend. And, you know, all you needed was the same ethnicity. And they were like, this works.
Yeah.
We're perfect together.
Yeah.
I think what town did they both find themselves in?
Watertown, Massachusetts, which is right near Cambridge.
Oh.
Is Massachusetts a place that people immigrate a lot? I don't know anything about anything.
I think so. I mean, my dad's entire family, my mom's entire family, and then a lot of people from my dad's town immigrated to Boston. I get, because I always ask them, I was like, you know, how come you didn't go the New York route? I kind of wish they had because I lived there for so long. And my dad is a landlord. And so I always wish that he had immigrated to New York and owned property there.
Yeah.
Cause I would have preferred to live there, but they immigrated to Boston for some reason. I think it was just another option of a port. And I think both of them have like the experience of, you know, someone, a family friend or like a distant relative ended up there. So then they ended up there.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is, yeah, that's interesting. A lot of people immigrated to like either Boston or New York or even like DC. I think there were just like a couple of port cities that everyone just like kind of gravitated to. But so your dad immigrated when he was 15. So he must have come with his family, right?
Yeah, he came with his parents and two brothers. And then my mom came with her parents and she has 6 brothers and no sisters.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So she's been an Italian housewife forever.
Oh God.
Yeah.
did their respective families, like, why, what were their reasons for coming here?
Well, I guess, you know, it's like everyone at that time in the 50s and, you know, it's like opportunity. Their parents had all lived through the war. I'm really bad with dates, but you know, that war that I'm talking about.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah. So, you know, I think there was a lot of like, go to a new country, opportunity. I mean, you know, I think America was hard pitched to, and probably still is to immigrants. Yeah, just, you know, more opportunity.
Yeah.
I do actually wonder if the current like coronavirus crisis and how poorly America has dealt with it will be like the turning point for us where they're like, ooh, yeah. Not, you know, sure, opportunity, but rampant with disease that is not controlled or dealt with well. And we're like, that's us. That's us.
Ugh. I know. And it's like, yeah. I was like in the process of collecting all my paperwork to get dual citizenship for Italy because I wanted a backup plan to have like European access if, you know, however this country goes. And then this happened. And then Italy is like one of the hardest hit. And I'm like, no, like all of my options, like New York is where I used to live. I'm probably not going to go back there. You know, like there's not. So, yeah.
Yeah. It's looking bleak. It's definitely looking bleak. But I mean, it's just, I think what Anna brought up is really interesting because like America has not been looking good recently. Like we have really, like the government has really shown their asses to like, they don't care about their citizens. Like you see how Canada is treating their citizens, how they're getting more of like a government stipend, or they have literally like free healthcare. And I have a cousin in Germany who she was saying that like they're really well taken care of, and like the government feels like she feels like they care about them. But I don't know what immigrant would choose America after this. This is like I think we're covering from. I'm curious what this will do to the narrative of like America as a land of opportunity, I suppose, you know?
Well, I mean, I've talked to, cause I've asked a lot of friends of mine who have come here from Canada that, like, why would you come here from like, and who've moved here in the last few years specifically. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, the ones that are in the entertainment business have all said, well, there's just more opportunity. So I think as far as like, the entertainment industry, like certain industries go, there is just more opportunity here, and there is a sense of more freedom. Like, yeah, you might not have health insurance, but you can, I don't know, protest topless. Like, you know, so I do think in like, as far as what immigrants would come here, like there's a lot of countries where you have zero rights. So I don't fully, like when I'm mad, I want to shit all over America, but like, I do understand the opportunity and privilege of living here. But at the same time, I think it's just a matter of like, I've always hated the whole like, oh, USA, like America's mm-hmm. the greatest country in the world. And it's like, anytime anyone self proclaims themselves to be the greatest, they aren't. Like, that's just, you know what I mean? Like, someone else, you have to be voted best pizza. You can't just buy a banner that says best pizza, you know, like, yeah. So that's what I feel like America has done. It's just for so long been like, we are number one. And I'm like, yeah, but like, who said that?
Yeah. That's a really good point.
It's just gotten like really cocky. And like, I love, you know, I mean, I love a lot of things about this place, but it has been really depressing, especially through this coronavirus, the whole pandemic thing has been upsetting. And then the way that our country has handled it, I think, has upset me more than the actual situation.
Yeah, I totally hear that. I totally hear that.
We are not killing it.
No, I mean, not that way. But okay, let's go back to your life a little bit. So you were born in Massachusetts. What was it like growing up there, like as an Italian American? Was there a lot of other Italian Americans, or did you kind of feel, and your parents are immigrants too, so what was that like for you?
You know, I don't know if it's a little complicated, as I'm sure everyone's life is. So, you know, there was like, there's plenty of Italians as far as, you know, I had a lot of relatives. There's the North End part of Italy, of Boston. That's, you know, like Little Italy. There's definitely different pockets and cities that had a lot of Italians. However, I grew up in a town called Belmont, Massachusetts, which was like, I don't know what other word to use other than white. And I know that sounds weird because I am white according to the census, and I'm not, I know I have white privilege, so I'm not like acting like an idiot right now. But as a kid, like I remember when I would fill out, you know, standardized tests, I remember so clearly I was like 7 or 8 years old, and it said, you know, like Caucasian, Asian, Black, other. And then I put other and wrote Italian. And my teacher was like, no, you're white. And I was like, no, I'm Italian. Like I really felt this sense of other because my parent, because like, there were Italians in my school, but they, I think, were like third, fourth generation for the most part. I don't know that for sure, but like the Italians I knew felt Americanized to me. And I think their parents mm-hmm. were born here, and because mine weren't, and because they spoke a different language, and, you know, they relied on my sister more so because she was older to like read the VCR directions and, you know, like stuff like that. it felt very other. And then my name is spelled with the G, and Julia in America is spelled with a J, and you wouldn't think that would be a big deal. But like, I remember like a teacher pulled me aside in sixth grade and was like, do you think you'll change your name to a J so your life is easier? And I'm like, what?
What the fuck?
And I was like, I don't know, let me ask my paraplegic blind poor friends what they think about my difficult. So there was just like things like that. And, you know, like everyone on my block, I felt like was very sort of, I don't know how to, like Belmont's an upper class, mostly white town. And we are Italian, so we're white. And my dad did well. But like my parent, I thought we were poor. Like even though we lived in a one family house, my mom like cut her own hair, only uses coupons. My dad will like collect cans. Like I thought we were poor, but then people were like, no, you live in a one family house and like your dad paid for your braces. And I was like, oh, like, so there was like a lot of that like immigrant poverty mentality. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that sort of, so I don't know, like it was a very, I've never quite figured out the appropriate language and how to talk about it, but like I did feel like I grew up other. And then in my school, all the kids that did speak a different language, like it felt very like either you were an all-American kid, at least this is how my teenage mind saw it. You were either an all-American kid that like did sports and were a prep, or you were like English as a second language, you know, didn't speak the language, special classes kid. And then I'm sure there's people in between like me, but I didn't feel that. I felt very alone with it, if that makes sense. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, totally. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
You're talking to the right people.
I think,
yeah,
I know. You're talking to the right people. We're here to make you feel less alone, you know?
Well, because
your experience,
you know,
is so valid.
Well, especially I think too, like, I don't know how old you guys are, but like, you know, I grew up in like the 90s and 80s, and, you know, I consumed a lot of television because my mom, very overprotective, preferred I stayed home and watch television and eat all the food rather than like be out in the dangerous world. And so I'd watch, like, you know, like Saved by the Bell and 90210 and, you know, these sort of like what looked like white American families where like the parents are like, how are you? I'm going to join the PTA, you know, and like, they're like blonde and like, you know, and I meanwhile, like we have the TV on during dinner, like dinner's like 5 minutes because we inhale our food. Someone's angry about something. And then like, I am in the bathroom trying to figure out how to get rid of my mustache. Like that's, you know, that was my
dude
experience.
That sounds like my childhood.
Yeah.
The mustache really, really rings true.
Yeah. There was always like a slipper being thrown at them across the dinner table. You know, like it was just a very 100%. Loud. Yeah. It was like a very loud, like I always sort of visualize it. Like if I were to think about my home, like my whole street was like, you know, Johnny next door takes out the garbage. And then you get to my house and it's just like beating like a stereo boombox. Like it's like vibrating because it's just like we're laughing, we're yelling, we're just like, bleh, like, I don't know, like these animals.
But there is something to be said about those very white shows, because my sisters and I, when we would watch those shows, whether it's any show that like represent, like, depicted high school, we were just like, we did not relate to anything. Like we did not relate to anything that these people were experiencing. We felt so strange. And I think the first time we really felt represented as like a family, like I can remember, is from My Big Fat Greek Wedding, which is, we're not Greek.
Me too.
We're not anything. Yes. But like, there's something so unifying. I'm Syrian and Anna is Iranian.
Yeah.
Yeah. My Fat Greek Wedding, 100%.
Yeah. So like that was the first time I saw this like loud, rambunctious, like very like funny way of depicting immigrants. And even though they weren't Arab at all, it was like I felt so seen. And I think that's kind of similar to just like, I don't know, like we're all kind of alike, I think is what I'm trying to say. Like even though we're not the same ethnicity, there's something very unifying about being children of immigrants. That will just latch on to like the first sight of representation for like dear life and be like, I'm not a freak. Yeah. Like, yeah. I exist out there too.
Well, yeah. I think it's so interesting now because like, I don't know, again, in the 90s, the vibe and the message, my husband and I talk about this all the time, it was like cross color jeans and, you know, it was all like, see no color, we are all one, right? And now mm-hmm. I think because my theory is because now we're all forced to represent ourselves in a social media bio, everyone has gotten into labels and it's all about identity politics now. And so I feel like sometimes when there's these discussions happening where people are like, I'm this, I just sort of get tossed in a white girl category, which, okay, like I completely acknowledge privilege and I understand, but like it's not that cut and dry. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that makes like, it's just a weird, it's a weird thing. Like, that's why I think as a 7-year-old, I checked off other, because I was like, why is everyone who's not like on that list? It was like, if you weren't Asian, Black or Hispanic, you were literally tossed in this white category. And it was, well, I guess, yeah. What did you guys put?
I also would write other and say Iranian, and then my teachers would be like, no, you're technically Caucasian, you're white. And I'd be like, this is not correct. I am not white. I don't have your experiences. My parents do not make me PB&J sandwiches for lunch.
Yeah.
Like, I am not white. This is incorrect. Please don't count me as that. And everyone would be like, well, technically, that's what you're labeled as. And I'd be like, this is just not okay. And then I would get in trouble for being like, I am different. And it was a mess.
But it isn't, because I remember as a teenager, though, like when I first sort of started to notice, I don't know, I just remember this moment, I think I was like 16, and I had gone to visit a friend in like a more, I don't know, is urban the right word? It wasn't my town, let's say. It was a different part of Boston. And I remember I was like, oh, when I'm in this neighborhood, I think people think that I might be Hispanic or something. So like, I don't really get the looks of like, oh, a white person has arrived. But then when I'm back in my white town, I don't stick out as other. I do in my own mind because I know my experience, but physically I just blended in with the white kids. So it is like a interesting, I don't know, you're almost like a chameleon where you can kind of like, I guess that's the whole point, ethnically ambiguous, but it is like an interesting thing to kind of float in. So that is in a way a cool thing, I guess, because you can be like, I'm whatever you want me to be, you know?
Yeah. And I think there is something to be said about like recognizing the privilege that comes with that. Like there's like, I definitely will acknowledge my white privilege, like because it's there, even though like I might not relate to the experience of being white, but I can't deny that like I have certain privileges that like a darker counterpart of me does not have, you know? I want to talk more about this, but we're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be right back.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
And we're back. You guys were talking about selecting white on like every census kind of deal. And I had the same experience where I would always pick other and write Syrian. And then I remember being so enraged when we were applying to colleges. I was only allowed to apply to colleges within California, which were like the UC system. And in the UC application, I very clearly remember it said you had to choose your race, and it says white, and then in parentheses, including Middle Eastern. And I was so mad. I was so enraged because it's just not the experience that I related to. Like, my parents are immigrants. I learned English second. I had an accent growing up. I didn't feel white. I wasn't treated as white. My parents, we always got like harassed at the airport. Like, I just was so mad. And I still to this day, I will never put white. I will always put other and then fill in Syrian because I can acknowledge my privilege like in my day-to-day life. But I don't think I should be forced to like label myself that way. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I hate the labels just in general. I mean, I feel a little bit like an asshole sometimes saying this as an Italian person, because I remember when I think it was Ariana Grande like tweeted or something like, "I'm not white, I'm Italian," and got so much shit for it. And then I also within my own culture, when I meet someone who's like, yeah, they're like, yeah, I'm wicked Italian. And I'm like, oh, really? What part of Italy are your parents from? They're like, no, it's like my great, 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 great grandfather on my mom's side. And I'm like, nah, like, and then I get almost like I'm more Italian than like, because it's not really about being Italian, which is what felt like the otherness. It's about the immigrant parent. Like, I think that's what you were saying earlier. Like, everyone I meet who has immigrant parents, like you said, no matter where they're from, it could be China, it could be, you know, Mexico, it could be like anywhere. I totally bond with them instantly. You just kind of know. There's just like a, I don't know. There's like a
you had rawness. A different experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. You bond over feeling like a freak when you were a kid.
So like, I don't know what the word for it is. Like, I kind of hate that the words that we're forced to use involve color, because it's not really about that. It's about, it's like ethnicity. Like I'm like, when I meet people and I'm like, oh, like, what's your ethnicity? Like, I remember always asking people, because I was also raised by parents that were like, Italian, you know, be as friends with as many Italians as you can. You can always trust an Italian, you know, all this stuff. But I watched this really, really amazing 4-part documentary series. It was on PBS, and then I think it's on Amazon Prime or Hulu. I can't remember. But it's called The Italian Americans. It's like a 4-hour series. And it was like, I cried. I felt so understood. It was all about how, like, when Italians first immigrated here, you know, in the early 1900s, they were not considered white. They were like completely discriminated against as gangsters and like as criminals and yada, yada, yada. And then like, and then how Italian culture has just been completely bastardized by like Jersey Shore and like all these mob movies. And like, that's something that I've always, you know, been annoyed about and hope to do with my career, is like, I want to show like a family like mine that isn't in the mob, at least as far as I know. And, you know, isn't like, like Jersey Shore. I watched it because it's like watching animals in a zoo. But like, I was like, you are not fucking Italian. Like, Snooki wasn't even Italian. She's like, she's adopted by Italians. Anyways, that's a rant. Okay, I just talked
really?
For an hour.
Oh, I don't.
Yeah.
No, you're good. That's the whole point.
As I'm talking, I'm spinning a pizza pie.
Yeah, it is a weird thing because it is about the experience more so than what is considered brown or what is considered white. It's like I grew up feeling othered, and like Shireen and I get this a lot where people are always like, what are you guys even complaining about? You're like white. And it's like, oh, yeah, you're right. We're so white that we didn't have to grow up with like people commenting on certain aspects of our life or feeling like we don't fit in. Like, I grew up in a mostly white neighborhood. I was the only Persian person in my community, basically, that I knew of that was around my age at my school until another Persian girl moved into the neighborhood, and everyone thought we were related. Like, that's how like weird it was. They were like, that's your cousin, right? And I'm like, I've never met her. I'm gonna go introduce myself with you. Like, what are you talking about? Like, that's how weird it was. And it's like, yeah, sure, you can say, I have the privileges of having lighter skin tone, so I can like, you know, easily blend in. But like, I had to grow up in a certain way and had to deal with all my own emotions and feelings towards everything. And I had to go to therapy and work it out and be like, why do I feel so empty and alone? It's like, you can't take any of that away and just say you're white, so why are you complaining? Everything is set for you. It's like, yeah, technically my skin is lighter, but I grew up a certain way and that's what my identity is based off of.
Yeah, I really get frustrated with that.
Well, it's also tricky because it's like, I mean, I don't know if they're referring to something specific, but it's not complaining. Like, that's why I said it's hard for me sometimes to talk about this stuff because I do want to be very aware of privilege. And like, so my husband is Black, and that has been really like, we talk about this stuff all the time, and he even has like jokes about, he's a comedian, and he has this one joke where he's like, my wife's like not white. She's like Italian. Like if she was a ABC show, she'd be whitish. And like, I'm like so honored because he wasn't mad at me when I explained this stuff. Like when he met my family, he was like, oh, I get it. You're not like a regular. Yeah. See, oh, it's like so. And also because the term white girl has now become such an insult.
Yeah.
Like, isn't that crazy? Like, I mean, it's almost like when people write these tweets, and I know I'm basing it off Twitter, which is the worst place to base anything off of, but when people are like, white women always do this, and I like never relate to any of it. Like, I don't get
well, because again, there's like the immigrant experience is, I think, the first and foremost, like what makes someone feel othered, you know?
Yeah.
But I understand what you mean by feeling weird about talking about it, because there is this a sense of like not being enough. So like if someone is like, for example, a second generation or even a third generation, they might not feel that they're whatever enough, like Italian or Arab or Iranian enough to feel like they belong in that community. So there is like this kind of, there's a line where I would never want someone to feel like I was like, oh, I'm more this than you. Like, it's a culture I'm not a part of, you know? So like similar to Anna, like I was the only Syrian in my school. I always got every community I went to, they'd either talk like Spanish to me or even Farsi. Like everyone thought I was like something that I wasn't. And it's hard to grow up always feeling othered. And then you grow up and you get accused of complaining where you're like even just recently, last week I tweeted that, and I almost snapped back, but I didn't. But last week I tweeted a joke about standing like 6 feet away from a cop and feeling alive after, because I had a bag of shrooms in my pocket. And it, like the tweet, like it got a bunch of responses, mostly positive, but there were like three people that were like, I guess it depends on the color of your skin to get away with it or whatever. And someone else was saying like, easy to say for a white person. And I didn't respond to these people, but I really wanted to reply to them being like, yeah, like Arab people don't get harassed and searched on a daily basis and racially profiled. Like how is my experience any, like, it's just, it made me so mad that that was what they took away from my stupid tweet joke. Like, they were just, I don't know, I guess it's more complicated than just a stupid tweet, but it just reminded me of this idea that people will just like take me at whatever their face value is and not see any depth to my experience. And that's really insulting because you're pretending that my family and I didn't get harassed every time I went to the airport. We didn't get our baggages like completely destroyed. I got like interrogated by the TSA on several occasions. Like you're, I don't know. It just, it negates my struggle. And I think that's so insulting.
Yeah. I mean, I think what the important thing to remember, and I try to remember this always, when everyone has had, I assume, the feeling of other, regardless if they are of their race, of their ethnicity, you know, like I have a redhead friend who has dealt with feeling othered. I have a friend who is awkwardly tall, you know, like a friend who's awkwardly tall, you know, heavy set, mm-hmm. like, you know, like everyone can feel it to a certain degree. And I acknowledge that. And I mean, I love it when people talk about their experiences of feeling like other, because I think one of the most universal feelings that we all have had is feeling like an outsider, you know, about something. Like, I mean, at least that's how I feel. I just think it's a bummer when, I don't know, like, okay, so here's a good example, I guess. So I had I don't work with this person, actually left the business, thank God. But there was an agent that said to me, you know, it's going to be really hard to get you in a writer's room because you're not a person of color and you're not, you know, queer, whatever, you know. And they're like, I know that you have immigrant parents, but like, it's kind of not like enough. And I was like, and they're like, I know you're a woman, but like, that's not good. But you're like a white woman technically. And it was like, I mean, I didn't even know how to handle this conversation. It was this person ended up leaving the business. So they obviously didn't want to do their job. And it was just a lot of bullshit. And like, it was such a bizarre thing. Cause like, first of all, I was like, I mean, I did hook up with some girls in my past. Like, do we want to use that? Like, do you need to put that on my resume? Like, you know, like, do you know what I mean? And then I'm like, how not white? Do you, like we're really, it was just such a bizarre, I don't even know how to, I hope I don't sound like an asshole but like, I didn't even understand what to do with her information. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. So you just told me I'm not other enough to have a job? Like, what is this information supposed to do? Just make me mad at people who do get jobs? Like, it was bizarre. I don't know. It's that's like my moment where you got mad about the college application. I think about this conversation I had all the time, because I'm just like, it made me feel bad. Like all these years.
But like, that's the dangerous thing. That's the dangerous thing about, like, for example, I feel like because people don't feel like they're other enough, they might like amplify a certain aspect of themselves to make them feel like for example, the thought that you had about bringing up that you hooked up with women in the past, like
yeah,
as if
exactly.
That you needed that to validate your experience. Like, I see that happen a lot in the queer community, where it's like a lot of white women will really hold on to the label of queer, which is completely valid, but I almost feel like it's weaponized to be like, look, I've struggled, I'm different, I'm not just a normal white person. And I think that's where it gets really testy.
That's what I mean. Like, I didn't say that. I would never, I don't refer to myself as queer, because I haven't had that experience of like, I'm not, I'm a mostly straight, I get, but I also hate any of those. I hate labels. I'm in love with a man currently. And I think I will be for the long haul, but yes, I have touched a vagina with permission, and it was pretty cool. can I have a job, please?
Yeah.
You know, I
admire that you didn't weaponize it. That's what I'm trying to say. Like, I think that's what leads people to weaponize their little aspects of themselves, because they feel like they have to, especially because it's like annoyingly on trend to not to be a person of color, to the point where like we're even further tokenized, which is really frustrating.
Well, yeah, and that's what I mean about, like, the Twitter bio is, like, you know, every now and then, and again, God, fuck me for even talking about Twitter, but it's, like, when, you know, some random will, like, respond to something in that way that you just described, you know, like, getting mad at you for a stupid joke, and I'll be like, who is this person? And then I go to their bio, and it's, like, you know, I'm a liberal. I'm a Christian. I'm bisexual. I'm a blue haired, it's like, so, do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, I'm this. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I don't really actually know anything about you from these things. Like, you just told me a bunch of boxes that you check, but like, it's an interesting time. Like, I'm curious to see how this, I don't know. I mean, I'm curious to see how, if this calms down in a way, and cause I don't know, I mean, maybe I'm like an idealist, but I miss those cross color, we are all one sort of like vibes that used to be kind of the trend. God, I sound old.
No, I mean, it's true. You find yourself being like, I don't fucking get it sometimes. I do it too. I'm only 29. I'm about to be 30 in a month. But I will like sit there and be like, oh, I've reached that point where I'm like, I don't get it. Well, I don't get what these kids are talking about. And I'm like, well, might as well just accept that I'm no longer young. Well, you know, I'm young, but I mentally have hit a point where I'm not understanding what like Gen Z is doing half the time. And I'm like, and that's just where I'm at. And I also don't like labels. It's like the fluidity is all like, you shouldn't have to say, well, you know, the reason I hooked up with girl, I was experimenting. It's like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're allowed to hook up with whoever the fuck you want. It doesn't matter. None of it matters in the grand scheme of things. And I always feel like I'm just talking to myself in the mirror where I'm like, who cares? Like, wear that outfit. It doesn't matter. Do your hair, stupid. Nothing matters. It's like, it just, how you present yourself as a human being. Are you a nice person? Are you respectful? Like, that's all that matters. I don't care who you're fucking on the side. Like, honestly, half the time I don't care if, like, I growing up, I always had this thing where I was always wondering if my dad had a mistress because there was always weird vibes in the house. My mom would always make snide comments.
I always wondered if my dad had one too.
I'd always just be like, it was never confirmed, but I always had these like weird thoughts, like, I don't know, man, something's up here. But then like later in life, I was just like really thinking about it, and I was like, who fucking cares? Clearly my mom really didn't care if he did, because she stayed with him. It like never really, like, she was the type of like Muslim woman who was like, I don't know, he brings money home, so who fucking cares? It's like, who am I to judge their relationship? Like, she was fine with it. He seemed to be doing, he was up to his own shit. And she was like, honestly, this is a contract. We're in a contract at this point. And I'm like, why should I judge their style of marriage at any point? It's like, I don't, you know, it's a wild life.
Maybe that's how we should categorize people, is not by race or, you know, ethnicity, but their parents' marriage. Because if you are the child of two people who clearly should have gotten divorced 20 plus years ago, but remain together because that's what you do, then that's a whole other category. It was, I don't know if it's wrong to quote someone else's joke or tweet, but, you know, Marcella, right?
I love her.
She tweeted this thing. I think about it all the time. It was about Marriage Story, and I'm going to totally butcher it, but she was just basically like, show Marriage Story to like immigrant parents. Because like those arguing, you know.
I remember this tweet.
And I remember being like, oh, I'm so jealous. Because like, yeah, like, oh, boo-hoo, you punched a wall once. Like, wow. Like, that's what I mean when I say I'm watching a white family.
Yeah.
Like, and that's not to minimize their dysfunction. And also, I just want to like clarify, I'm always like, I never want to offend, but like, I don't mean to minimize anyone who is like I understand why people tell, like, share that they're queer or bisexual. Like representation is important, and you know, young people who are dealing with it want to see people own those labels proudly. So like, I don't mean to minimize any of that at all. I think it's what I think Shireen was saying about the weaponizing of it, of like, you know, there's certain people who all of a sudden that was never a thing, and then now it's like,
oh yeah. All,
you know, and so I'm not saying it's wrong or right. I just get overwhelmed with labels because I grew up of a generation that was like, we're anti-label. Yeah. I'm an individual. You can't label me.
I completely relate to everything you say or you were saying about labels, because I really never liked labels. Like, I found the word queer and I really latched onto it because I was like, this is so ambiguous. This is exactly how I feel. I feel very fluid. I want to live my life, but people are trying to put me in a box, so I'll just say I'm queer. And so even like when you talk about like a Twitter bio, I still struggle with these stupid little blips that I have to put on Instagram or Twitter to define myself. Like, I go back and forth with putting, like, I literally did this last week. I took out the word Syrian and then queer from my bio because I was like, why does it fucking matter? And then the whole like comment happened, so I added Syrian back in because I was like, I have to remind people that I'm like I have this whole battle with myself being like, I hate labels so much, but I can't deny that a younger version of myself would have loved to see a queer Syrian woman out here and proud. So the value of labels is so clear to me because I know why they exist. They're for representation and they're for people to feel seen. But there is like an underbelly of it where it's kind of makes me sick. Like, it kind of makes me a little annoyed that I have to remind people that I'm an Arab queer woman. Like I just want to exist and love whoever I love and be brown and without fucking reminding you of it every 2 seconds, and also like relying on it to get a job. Like, that's definitely happened. And so it's just like, I don't know. It's a double-edged sword because I love being a person of color and I love whoever I love, but it also feels icky to have to remind people of it in my fucking bio.
Well, I think the whole bio thing too just also falls under the, I don't know if this bothers you guys, but like, you know, falls under the umbrella of branding, which is a thing that literally everyone, even if you're not a business, suddenly has to do. And like, I even find myself sometimes having moments. So like, okay, I'm a comedian and I'm a writer and, you know, I guess people probably, and I'm Italian, I guess that's interesting. I don't know. And you know, I'm really into self-helpy therapy stuff. Okay. Like, so these are all the things, right? Mm-hmm. I like vintage clothes. I don't know if any of this matters, right? So those are the things I guess people kind of expect to see if they go to my socials, is like jokes or a cute outfit. I don't know. But then like, I don't know, I've been writing poetry lately. I'm like, can I post a poem? I mean, I know I can, but now do I have to put poet in my bio? Like, is this my new brand? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it is a weird.
Yeah.
We're living in an era where you are presenting a version of yourself to the world, especially if you have a public profile. And I can't even, like, I'm about to have a child in a few months.
Oh my God. Congratulations.
Thank you.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I am a pregnant in quarantine, and I think about this stuff all the time. Like, there was a period where I was really nervous to bring a kid into this world, not because of all the shit that's going on, but because I was like, God, like, I don't want them to feel the pressure of labeling themselves and branding themselves. And like, I don't know, it just seemed, I mean, I do think things will change. And I do think part of this whole, I'm really going on a soapbox now. I really do think this like universal reset is going to be interesting to see. It's already changed my values a lot in the last few weeks and what's important and all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, like, you know, my daughter is going to be biracial and she's going to be growing up with a phone in her face. Not my phone, but like, you know, it's, I don't know. I'm curious to see what that's going to be like.
Yeah, wow. That's interesting to raise a biracial child. Yeah, well, yeah, let's do it. Right on that moment.
sorry.
How interesting. We got to go.
we'll get into it. No, sorry. I'm not going to segues. No, I'm just like alone in my apartment. I don't know. Sorry. If I was looking at you, I'd be so much more graceful about this segue, but I'm a piece of trash. Okay, we'll take one more break. We'll be right back.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Are you still searching for your perfect place to call home? Well, now is the time to buy at Fisher Homes. If you're looking to move in before the end of 2024, May could be your last opportunity to start building your dream home and close before the year's end. If you're hoping to move in even sooner, Fisher Homes also has homes that are move-in ready and waiting for you, where you can start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with a new home advisor today at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home.
And we're back. This has been such a good conversation.
Yeah. I was curious, so growing up with your parents being Italian immigrants, like when did you want to start doing comedy, and when did you tell them you were going to do comedy or like something that was like, what did they expect? Like, did they have any, were they like doctor, lawyer or whatever? Or were they like, yeah, live your life?
They were, again, complicated because there was, like, my dad didn't go to college. In fact, he was, like, held back in high school because when he got here, his education level didn't match up. So I think he graduated high school at, like, 18 or, you know, like, 17, yeah. Like, something older. And then my mom, you know, only went up as far as she had to in Italy, which I think was sixth grade, eighth grade. So it was sort of a mix of like America, American dream. We can afford college. You should go to college. You should be they really wanted me to be a lawyer because I'm good at arguing. Mm-hmm.
Same.
Well, I had.
That's exactly what my parents said.
Yeah, I mean, I had to be good at arguing.
Yeah,
yeah, it was the only way to survive. But then there was also there was a lot of like, you know, like grades are important. Like, we want you to be American dream as a lawyer, a smart person, whatever, whatever. Meanwhile, my grades in high school were like B's and C's because I did have a little bit of that English second language. I probably should have gotten a handle on that. Like, I do think I didn't have like parents I could come home to and be like, can you help me with this? Like, and they offered to get me tutors, but I was like, no, like, I don't know. I didn't kill it in high school. I did much better in college. Anyway, so there was that part of them. But then the other part was also sort of like, but also you could just marry someone and be a mom, you know? So it was this weird, like, these are sort of the two, at least that's what it felt like. I don't know if they would agree, but I felt like, you know, I had the example of like my parents, which was my dad worked, my mom stayed home, and that would have been totally fine because anytime there was any discussion of guys, it was always like, do they have a good job? Are they Italian? Are they at least white? You know, like, all that stuff. And I mean, the answers to that right now are no, yes, good job, but the other stuff, no. So when I started doing comedy, I don't think it was a shock, only because my family is very funny. My dad, especially, I cannot have a conversation with him without him cracking jokes. Like, they make fun of each other, you know, survival skill, yada, yada. And I was also like the kid that entertained, I guess. And then I kind of fell into stand-up. Like, it wasn't my plan. I was going to become a therapist, an art therapist.
Oh.
Yeah, I was going to go to grad school for expressive arts therapy. And then I tried stand-up in college. And then I've told this story so many times on podcasts, so I'll tell you the very abridged version. Basically, I was visiting a friend in LA who was, I should mention, I have to give a shout-out to Maria, because in high school, you know, I mentioned there was like some Italian kids, but I didn't really feel like they didn't have the immigrant parent thing. At least I didn't know if they did. Maybe they did. I just didn't know them. But this girl, Maria, transferred into my school system in sixth grade. And we like met on like the field one day. And I was like, I'm Italian. And she's like, I'm Italian. And she was like, my father's from Italy. I'm like, both my parents are from Italy. And I was like, did you get hit? And she was like, I did. Did you? And I was like, yes. And then we like,
went, oh my God.
Like, it was like in my head, we're holding hands and like spinning in circles, you know? And so she was like my lifeline through school. Like, we were kind of in different cliques, but we would have like rendezvous where we would just like talk about our families, and we're still best friends till this day. She's like one of my only friends from high school. Anyways, long story long, she was a waitress at the Comedy Store in LA. And when I graduated high school, I drove cross country to visit her before I was going to start grad school. She got me on the list for open mic. I ended up doing open mic. I ended up getting passed at the Comedy Store by Mitzi Shore, the owner. And I was like, oh no, this is just like a hobby. And they were like, you should move here. So anyways, I moved to LA, did stand up for a couple of years, and mostly talked about my family. Like, that was like my shtick. It was like jokes about the Olive Garden and plastic on the couch. And that was like, I was pretty one note. And then I left LA and moved to New York and was like, I guess I'm a comedian. And just, yeah. And now I'm back in LA, and I still do jokes about my family. But I also talk about a lot of other stuff too.
Nice.
Was that? I feel like that was a mile a minute story, but that's been an interesting thing too, to be honest. Like, as far as like incorporating my family into stand-up, so when I first started, it was sort of the easy jokes about having an Italian immigrant family. And then like the more that I watched, you know, TV, and I really think I agree about the whole My Fat Greek Wedding. Like, I was like, no, like, I don't want to make caricatures of them. So there was a few years where I didn't talk about them at all on stage. And I remember people being like, why don't you ever do your mom's impression anymore? And I'm like, because I want to actually present them as people and not complete caricatures. And so it's been really nice, because I feel like over the last few years, I've sort of figured out how to start talking about them again in a way that is more true to the conversation we just had for the last hour, than whatever I was doing in the beginning when I was a lot younger. So yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think I understand this fear of caricaturizing your parents, because I felt the same way. Like, I dabbled in comedy and I really love comedy, but I think like I would feel the same about like being nervous about just doing impressions of them, because I would never want to make fun of them or like make them feel like I don't know, was coming from a weird place, because it's really funny to me, but I don't want people to laugh for the wrong reasons, you know? I don't want them to be further othered and further just like made out to be weirdos.
I've had the conversation with quite a few comics about accents, and there was a while where I didn't do my mom's accent when I would talk about her, and I had people be like, wait, why aren't you doing her accent? Her accent's the best part. And she has like a very deep voice. Like, she kind of sounds like the Count from Sesame Street. And like when people would call, they thought she was my dad and stuff. And so, I remember talking to different, and I was like, yeah, like I have to do her accent, not because it, and it's not because I guess what it is I wanted to make sure the jokes weren't contingent on the accent. The accent just happens to come in because I'm doing an impression of someone. Do you know what I mean? Like, what she's saying isn't funny because she's like, I'm making a sauce, you know, like there's an actual punchline and she happens to have an accent. So that's why I've been more comfortable bringing back her accent, because what she's saying is a little bit more genuine and interesting and not just fluff. But like, I mean, it's interesting because like I'll watch, you know, impressions of Italians, and I don't get offended. I mean, who fucking cares? Italians, they're fine. But like, Italians are, so many of them are so racist. But they are
most immigrant cultures.
I know. And it's like, and they don't even think they're being racist. No. They're just being blunt.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like everyone my parents refer to them by their ethnicity or their color. It's just how they are. But like, it's funny because I'll see, you know, there's always caricatures of Italians. Like, it's always like, I feel like comics are always like, yeah, I'm a this a bit, you know, it's like, it's one of the only ethnicities I feel like is totally cool to do impressions of. And I get so eye-rolly when I see it. I'm just like, yep, that's an, yep, you got it. that's totally what an Italian sounds like. Like, it's, I don't know. It's, I don't even know what I'm saying anymore, you guys. It's weird because I'm not, I feel like I'm talking to myself.
I know. Isn't it great?
I've been staring at a pillow the whole time. I was like, hello? You should, is anyone there?
Print out our faces for the pillow.
I know. I'm like, I feel like I've just been doing a verbal diary. I've been like, and another feeling I have. I feel like somebody is going to write a letter and be like, that white bitch was so colorblind or like
no,
whatever.
No, no,
no. No, our fans are, they're
I
nice.
Will
they
admit
get it.
That I pulled up your Twitter. No, our fans are cool, but I will admit that I pulled up your Twitter because I wanted to see your face. I was like, I want to imagine her talking to me. So I went to your fucking Twitter like a freak.
Should I change my bio? It really doesn't give me any
Oh, no,
that's
not why. I wanted to see what, I just wanted to see, to imagine your face. Let's like fast forward into the present time. Before this all happened, before self-quarantine or whatever, like what are some projects that you were doing or that you were working on or what's going on in your world?
Actually, this has been the first kind of little bit of my life where I pulled back on. I've always been like a producer creator. I hosted a podcast for a few years with my husband called Hopefully We Don't Break Up, where we interviewed other couples. And we put that to the side probably about a year ago. We did like 100 episodes and it was really fun. But like the last year, it was a lot of stand up. Like I was touring the last 2 years. I did a few appearances. I did like my first late night, like just a lot of really fun things came up with stand up. The funny thing was I kept saying to people, 2020, I don't want to tour as much. I want to like really just kind of, cause I moved back to LA 2.5 years ago, but then immediately started traveling for shows and then kept getting booked on jobs in New York the second I left. So I kept being like, 2020, I really just want to like be in LA, just like really plant my feet here and like really spend the year here. And then quarantine happened. And I was like, oh, like I didn't mean it like that. So this is all my fault. No, but I've been writing a lot and actually trying to, I guess it's going to be a screenplay. I don't know, but it's definitely about me as a teenager. And it does incorporate a lot of this. I know that I'm white, but still feel other because of the immigrant parents. Like, I guess I would say it's almost like my Fat Greek Wedding, but as a kid. So I would really love for that to be something because I haven't seen it. I also haven't seen a lot of things set in Boston that don't involve like trashy, like, yeah, like that, yeah. Like, you know, we're Boston gangsters, like that kind of thing. So, yeah, God, I'm really terrible at promoting myself right now. What else am I doing? I don't know. I do whatever people ask me to do. I do. Great. That was great. I'm sure I really just got a lot of fans out of that.
No, I mean, it's the LA like industry hustle. Like I did that for years where I was just producing whatever anyone asked me to produce before. Like I was just like, I just have to keep doing it until someone's like, you're good enough to have a job working full time to be paid all, like, it's just like you do whatever you do and then, you know, someone gives you a longer job and then that ends and then you, I mean, that's like all we do. That's like all
well,
I
it
do.
Was really nice. Yeah, it was really nice because like in New York, there just feels like a lot of more, for me, there was a lot of hustle energy and I'm sure it was also because I was younger, but I was like, you know, producing this stage show and a weekly show and a monthly show and a podcast. And then it's been really great because like I got here and I really like my home. So I think that's why I started touring so much because I was like, oh, I'll tour and make money and work on my art. And then if I don't have a writing job or an acting job when I'm in town, I just like enjoy my hammock and my dog. And there's like, it's been nice to move to a city. I love New York, but I wanted to move somewhere that had a little bit more of a, I guess like a home drive to the grocery store sort of vibe to it. So yeah, and then I don't know what life will be like after this. I mean, I have to say I feel pretty lucky because I feel like I've been asked to do some things during this whole lockdown. I'm like, wow, a lot of people want to work with me when they don't have to be in the room with me. So that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I think this is it's a weird time to promote ourselves. Like, I feel like the idea of constantly hustling is so real for so many of us. We have finally like this time of quiet, and there's still kind of this like pressure to like keep going. But hopefully when this is all like, when we're able to interact again, I can actually meet you in the flesh, and
yeah,
we can have like a different kind of collab. But I think it's really helpful to just like keep connecting and like just talk about the conversations that we talked about here, because I don't know, podcasts are like, I don't know, they're an interesting way to connect with people, you know? And I know it feels like we just ramble, but I think it all has a purpose, you know? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, and I also think as far as the pressure, I feel like, I don't know if you guys felt this way, but you know, the first week or two of this situation, I was so overwhelmed. Every time I went online, I was like, oh, like people were like, hey guys, here's my new series. And I was like, wait, what? Like this just started. And I feel like it's kind of, I'm excited because I do feel like people have pulled back a little bit because you still want to have quality, not quantity. Mm-hmm. Like I've had ideas, but I'm like, no, I don't really think I can execute that for my house very well. I think I'd be better off like reading a book, and using this time.
I respect that. I respect
that. I'm putting some stuff out there, and when I do feel inspired and, you know, I'm having conversations with people about different things, but like, I don't want to almost blow my load during this time. Mm-hmm. That's such a horrible, disgusting visual. But,
no, but I know what you mean. Like, no, I know what you mean. It's like everyone's going live, and like back to the whole conversation about branding. It's very like, just like, look at me. This is my TV channel. Like, tune in here. And it's really overwhelming for me because I don't have that. Like, if anything, I am more reclusive now than I have been in a long time. Like, I'm so unmotivated creatively for some reason, and my brain is just mush. So,
because we're all experiencing
trauma. I know.
Yeah, exactly. But it goes back to the idea of like branding yourself and like your social media being this like channel into you and wanting eyes on yourself and whatever, and making your content still appealing when really it's kind of like almost taken the allure out of social media for me in a big way, because everyone is just like flailing and just trying their hardest. And if for them that means like to go live every night and like whatever, great, do you. I'm just not gonna be there. I'm gonna fucking take a break and like just turn off for a minute.
Well, I think especially for creative types, and especially for people who like, you know, get on stage, that kind of becomes a fuel after a while. And I think it's going to be really funny when everyone comes back to stand up, because everyone's going to be bad and it's going to be like the great equalizer. But like, I don't know, I think consuming art is just as important as creating it. And like, I think about all the times where I've been like, oh, I really want to like read this book or watch this movie, or you know, tie-dye. Like I just bought a tie-dye kit online.
Oh, yeah. Because
I've been like, you know, like I've been like wanting to do, or like I even said, like I wrote a poem the other day, like all these other sort of forms of art that I never really give myself a chance to do, because I'm constantly like, what's going to make money? What's going to get my visibility out there? And it's like, it's kind of been really nice to like, the other day I just like read a book in the bathtub and I was like, this is fucking awesome. Like I finished a book.
I read a whole,
I'm like bragging hard, but like I read a whole book in 2 weeks. And I'm like, I'm a fucking genius. Like I didn't know this was an option. I thought I had to always like have a fucking phone in my hand or be on a stage or like, and you don't. Like, and I feel like creative ideas are coming to me right now that feel a lot more in tune with what I actually want to do, because they're just coming
from
like, I love
that. I really, you know, love like, that.
They're like coming from within rather than like, what's everyone else do? Like, there's no competition right now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
I also did some tie dyeing and it was very nice.
Ooh.
I have no clothes left.
I have to
I'm
get
saying.
On this train.
I tie-dyed everything. I have no clothes left.
I love it.
This has been so lovely to talk to you. Tell our listeners where they can find you on these abominations of social media. I'm kidding. Shitting on social media, I'm going to ask you to plug yours, but that's exactly what I'm going to do. Where can we find you?
Well, like, I'd say Twitter is where I probably post the most because, like you said, it lets me be a little bit recluse, but like, mm-hmm. say something, you know, but you don't have to look at my face. I mean, you look at my little face. Anyways, yeah. So Twitter.
You can be a little bit more reclusive, yeah.
Twitter is just Julia Rozzi, GiuLiaRozzi. And then on Instagram, it's Ms. MS Julia Rozzi because there's a Julia Rozzi in Italy who hasn't posted since 2013, but she has my name.
Oh my God.
It's always someone.
That's exactly what happened to me in Twitter and Shirohiro. Shirohiro has been taken by one person since the dawn of Twitter. And it's, I can never, she hasn't posted in like 10 years.
Yeah, there should be, I messaged Instagram. There should be a thing like if you haven't posted in over 5 years, you should have to give up the name.
Yeah.
Right.
This is a top issue in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They can't be
utmost priority.
You can't be squatting on these Twitter handles, okay? I'm furious.
Okay, Ethnically Ambiguous. You can find us at on Twitter. Ethnically Amb, A-M-B, Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I am Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosnia on Twitter.
Yeah, and I hope you guys enjoyed this conversation. I 100% did. This was very therapeutic.
Yeah, thank everyone for listening. Thank you, Julia, for being our guest. And we gotta do this again in person after this is all over in however long.
Hell yeah. You guys can have some of this pizza pie I've been twirling.
Oh, hell yeah.
Okay, bye.
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 Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Did you know some travel credit cards offer 10 times points on your spending? Don't miss out on big rewards for your next trip. NerdWallet lets you compare smart travel credit cards side by side, curated by an expert team of finance nerds. What could future you do with better travel rewards? A free flight? A room upgrade? Don't wait to make smart financial decisions. Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. Reminder, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet. Finance smarter.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
What's up, y'all? Janice Torres here.
And I'm Austin Hankwitz.
We're the hosts of Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories, a podcast presented by iHeartRadio's Ruby Studios and Intuit QuickBooks. Join us as we speak with small business owners about the tools they use to turn their ideas into success.
From finding that initial spark of entrepreneurship to organizing payments and invoices, we've got you covered. So follow and listen to Mind the Business, Small Business Success Stories on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.